Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts.
It's with some regret that we noted the death of Alan de Cadenet, well known to listeners of particularly Radio Le Mans and Radio Show Limited, and a good friend to us down the years, to all of us, as Le Mans Classic was going on over the weekend. Sadly, we heard that he'd lost his battle with cancer. Joining me now is Andrew Marriott. We all felt that we knew de Cad because he was one of those people who came across in his writings, in his TV, and everything he does. You knew him better than most, having worked with him down through the years. And I hate to use this word, but a unique character. We'll not see another one like Alan, will we?
We certainly won't, John. I've written, and he was a one-off. You know, he was a man of intellect, of humour, and a brilliant communicator. You know, his father was, I think he was actually a count. He's certainly aristocratic French. I remember him telling me, and this isn't in any of the other obits you've seen, that he was actually a friend of de Gaulle. But he was an extraordinary character. And I don't know how I first met him, John, but he was sort of around and we were around and went down to the famous Mews down there in South Ken and looked at cars and discussed things. And then, you know, I've told this story before, but we were at the Long Beach Grand Prix and my friend Laurie Morton, who was our photographer on Motorsport magazine at the time, he was also very friendly with de Cad. So de Cad says, "Let's go and see my mother up in the Hollywood Hills. She's a B-movie film star these days, you know." "Oh, yeah, we'll go and see her. That should be a bit of fun." And we're on the way up there. And just before we get there, he says, "I hope she's in." So I came up here once. He said, "I locked on the door. No answer." Went in and she was in bed with Elvis Presley. I mean, you couldn't make it up, could you? But, of course, the way he started racing was very unconventional. Having been to a very upmarket public school of Framlingham, he was had a career lined out as a merchant city banker, and then he had a beautiful girlfriend at the time. I'm sort of using his words a bit, and anyway, some photographer stole it off him, so he thought, "Well, I better become a photographer," and he did become a quite well-known rock and roll and fashion photographer. And then another girlfriend was stolen off him by a racing driver, so he thought, "Oh, I'd better become a racing driver then." So he got an AC Ace at the time. And so they went down to Bristol. They went down to Brands Hatch, rather, with the AC Bristol. And they actually raced, or he raced this AC, with a car that was on retreaded tyres. And somehow he didn't actually have a licence. He was a member of the British Racing Sports Car Club. He'd done that. But he hadn't actually got a racing licence off what was then called the REC. And it was, he said, "Oh, this old dear there." And she said, "I suppose you've left your license behind, have you?" And he said, "Oh, yes, I have." And so they let him race. But very quickly, of course, he got the bug. And, of course, he did have funds. And that meant he could start buying some decent cars. So pretty quickly, you know, he was in international racing. And the very first race he did, he bought a Porsche 904 off somebody. And he drove up and did the Martini International at Silverstone. And he won some money. So he thought that was a pretty good game. So that sort of set him off on this great journey, which included some very nice motor cars. And then, of course, subsequently became an entrant at Le Mans.
Yeah, and that is, you know, part of his endearing legacy is the fact that he was one of these people who, he wouldn't take no for an answer, would he?
No.
He tried to buy a number of different cars down through the years with funds, and we can maybe talk about his innate ability to raise sponsorship as well, because that was legendary. But ended up going to Le Mans when he couldn't get the car he wanted. He thought, well, I can't say what he thought because he's told me that story before and I can't use his words on the radio, but he thought, to heck with it, and effectively started building his own cars.
Yeah, there was a bit of story behind that. It was a Ferrari 312 PB, the later one with the Boxer engine that he was trying to buy. Ferrari wouldn't sell it to him. But he'd gone very briefly into Formula One racing. He bought a Brabham BT33 and his friend Chris Craft was to race it. And they went off to do the two North American races. I mean, I was there, I remember it well. And so this rather elderly Brabham, and actually didn't qualify for Canada, but he got into the race at Watkins Glen. And Chris, I think he retired halfway through. But they had this Brabham BT33. And you just mentioned the sponsorship, John. It was sponsored by Bix Pickles, who were a big brand in America. And he said he was paid in jars of pickles. I'm not sure if it's true, actually, but it's a good story. So then he had this BT33. And somehow, because he knew everybody, how did he know everybody? He just did. He'd found Gordon Murray, who was then a sort of more junior designer at Brabham. And he persuaded Gordon to design a Le Mans chassis, because he'd worked out that the Ferrari was really a sort of two-seater Formula One car. So he thought, well, I've got this Brabham, I can do the same thing with that. And so he got Gordon to design a two-seater car and a chassis, and that and used parts from the Brabham. So the car, the first car he had, and he had lots of Le Mans cars over the 14 years that he ran there, basically had Brabham BT33 Formula One suspension and running gear. I think he got a new DFV engine, which he bought off Bruce McLaren, which was a special deal, of course, you know. And so that was the genesis of the first Decadenay that he raced at Le Mans.
And am I right in seeing that he progressed onto a very early Lola, a Huntingdon, very early Huntingdon Lola, not 12 miles from where I'm standing right now?
Yeah, so with that first car built by Gordon Murray, he finished 14th. So they moved on then to this Lola. I believe he had the first car, I think it was the T380, which is another Cosworth DFV engine car. And it was the very first Lola built at that Huntingdon factory. And the first year they went with this Lola, very disappointing. It wasn't fast down the straight. But he got that car modified and a new aero package. And, of course, the next year he finished third overall, which was an incredible result, really, for a private guy. And subsequently went on again to have cars built himself with his own chassis, actually designed by a guy called John Thompson. And John also at the time built the Ferrari Formula One cars. He's one of those little known guys that was working away somewhere in Northampton, you know. So, I mean, there was all these various different Formula One cars, but that's on a third or fourth year he went when he finished third. That was his best result at Le Mans, although he raced there for 14 years. And in the latter part of his career, he raced a lot with Yves Courage, but that third place, they never resurrected that, really. And that was a great one. You mentioned the sponsor. It was sponsored by Tate & Lyle Sugar and Duckhams. I think the car was called the Duckhams Decadenay for a while.
Yeah, it was.
And then, of course, in 1980, they had the great result in the Monza 1000K. He took a chance, really, on hiring Desiree Wilson to drive for him. And she proved absolutely mega. Well, when he won the Monza 1000Ks together with Des, it was started to rain. And everybody thought that the fact he'd left the car on slicks and it went on to win was a brilliant strategy call. Actually, they didn't have any wet tyres at all. But it was one of the finest drives by a woman racing driver in the whole history of motor racing. They went on and won the Silverstone 6 Hours. They were third at Brands Hatch, in what was those days called the Championship of Makes. But Le Mans was a bit of a disappointment because Des crashed in practice and they wouldn't let her take the start. So, and spurious French reasons as well, really. But anyway, he drove with Francois Migo there. And I think that year they finished seventh. But it was a brilliant season. I mean, for Des and for a privateer to get two victories in that world championship was absolutely incredible.
After the end of his motorsport career, he moved almost seamlessly into broadcasting, which anybody who knew him would have thought actually wasn't that big of a stretch, because he was an outstanding and consummate storyteller. And his style fitted perfectly into particularly the American TV of the day, Andrew.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, he was a dashing character, you know, very handsome man, had an English public school voice. And they just loved him. And, you know, he's got tremendous knowledge as well. Now, I worked with him in the early days with Speed Vision. You know, he was one of the pit lane reporters with me. And I don't think he ever turned up to one of our interminable production meetings on time, if he turned up at all. Didn't think they were really necessary, you know. But then, of course, he went on in the series on ESPN and Speed and so on, Legend of Motorsport, Victory by Design, Renaissance Man. And no, he led all those things. But he's perhaps most famous for the clip where he's talking about a World War II Spitfire. He flew one, you know, I think he even owned one. And he's talking about this plane. And, of course, then an actual Spitfire takes off and almost decapitates him. And it's so funny. You have to find it easily on the internet. But it's his reaction afterwards, which is really so funny.
Yes, where that was over at Duxford, wasn't it? Where they got famous pilot, classic pilot to take off.
Ray Hanna.
Well remembered, Ray Hanna. I met Ray a few times as well. Well known was Rear for doing more crazy things than anyone else. And he actually took off behind Alan. He didn't swoop down. He took off and got the gear up, the undercarriage up so quickly. And then very nearly took the cameraman with the propeller. It really was that low. Super bit of television. You mentioned Alan flying. One of my favourite remembrances of Descartes was he was bringing back a Boeing Stearman biplane for, I presume it had been bought by a friend or a customer, and he was flying it back from Europe and happened to be flying close to Le Mans over a Le Mans weekend and had completely forgotten Le Mans was happening, and only when he saw it, he dropped in at Le Mans, of course he did, and he found his way to the Radio Le Mans studio and decided he was going to bivvy down for the night, and we managed to find him somewhere to stay and sent him off to what was then the Audi Hotel up at the welcome area when they did those big hotels in the big warehouses up there, and sent him off to that. But before so this was the Friday afternoon. So before he went off to, as he said, to pay the bill for us looking after him, he sat in the studio and started telling stories about the first time he ever went flat through the Mulsanne kink when he was driving with Chris Craft. And all of these stories just flooded out. And I remember Joe Bradley actually sitting in the studio with his back to the studio door so that nobody from the then management could get in and stop us talking, because he was brilliant and he just reeled them off. And I really wish that we had that archive somewhere, because it was Descartes at his absolute best, and he was always so generous with his time. He was brilliant and just a super chap, and he hadn't been well for a couple of years, Andrew.
Well, I think even maybe as long as four. And he did some other things as well. I don't know if you know this, he used to go to Buckingham Palace and meet the Queen, because Descartes and the Queen have the two finest collections of George V stamps in Britain, or anywhere in the world, of course. And I remember him telling me that story. I mean, there's so much, so many different factions of the man, you know.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I was just full of enthusiasm all the time. One of the other reasons I knew him was the fact that his first wife, Anna, was also part of our set back in the early days when I was in my early 20s back in Derbyshire. So I sort of knew his wife before I knew him, strangely enough. Now I'm remembering it all. And of course, his daughter, Amanda, went on to be a TV star herself. And, you know, she was on The Word, presented The Word and The Big Breakfast. And his son, Alexander, we always called the little chap. But it was sometimes known as the Bruiser, is a sculptor and painter and photographer. So an incredible family.
Andrew, so much, we hear so much and we know so much about Alan, and many will describe him as a man of his time. I always thought that whilst that was true, he would have preferred, if we'd been able to ask this question of him now, he would have been much happier to have been in his pomp in the late 20s, early 30s. He was a Bentley boy out of era. And indeed, he used to go up and tend the grave of Tim Birkin every year on the anniversary of the death. He was that boy's own Harry Hotspur type of figure, wasn't he?
You've hit it on the nail there, John. Absolutely. I don't think there's many left like him, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, so many fond memories. And I'm sure when we come to have the funeral, I don't know if they're going to have a service back in the UK. You know, even more crazy stories will come out. But of course, sort of his group, you know, Chris Kraft died recently. The team manager, Keith Green, also passed away in the last year or so. So, you know, time moves on and fortunately we have these great memories of them.
We pass on our condolences to his wife, Alison Alexander, his son and his daughter, Amanda, and the many friends of Alan de Cadenier in motorsport paddocks around the world and in TV production. An absolute one-off, as Andrew Marriott described him in his motorsport magazine obituary. Andrew, sad times to talk to you, but great to hear the stories of a wonderful, wonderful man.
Thank you, John.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.